are now tuned in to Shotgun Sports USA, powered by Winchester. Recorded in the U.S. and streaming all over the world, your host Justin Barker talks to shotgun shooters from all disciplines, championship-winning coaches, gun clubs, world-class target setters, vendors, and industry-leading companies that fuel the sport. If you're into clay target sports, you're at the right place for insider information from some of the best in the world every single week. Subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and connect with us on social media. You can also catch our episodes on ShotgunSportsUSA.com.
Being a brand name in the clay target industry, Rick Hemingway has said, "Have you ever noticed almost all major sporting events are being run by Pro-Matic traps?" I thought about that statement, and he's right. And you may want to consider that before making your next purchase. Rick is the largest Pro-Matic dealer specializing in individual and commercial trap sales. Rick provides skeet, trap, five-stand, and sporting clays designs, installs, and service. He also offers accessories such as solar panels, wireless release systems, as well as the hottest item on the market, the ClayBot by Rainier Products. Visit BackwoodsQuailClub.com or give Rick a call at 843-546-1466. Castellani Shooting Vests are manufactured in Italy and internationally recognized by elite shooters as the most popular lightweight shooting vest on the market. Castellani Vests are especially known for their Italian styling and superior craftsmanship and quality, making them a vest of choice for all shooting disciplines. Ultimate Shooting Accessories is the exclusive supplier for Castellani Vests in the United States. Visit ultimateshootingaccessories.com for more information and to place your order. My guest today holds 26 world titles, 19 European championships, 11 British and English championships, and 16 World Cups. He is the most successful world and European clay target shooter ever. Please welcome to the show, George Digweed. All right, George, it's an honor to have you on with me today. Welcome to the show.
Oh, nice to be here. Thanks very much for having me on.
Yeah, I see that shooting's finally opened up over there. What have you been doing while you couldn't shoot?
Look, it's been a very, very difficult time. It's been a very difficult time worldwide. And I think different countries have treated the pandemic different to others. You, I don't think you have probably had the, and this is only my view looking from the outside in, I don't think you've had the degree of lockdown that we've had here. And I think certainly with the shooting sports side of it, it seems to have gone on relatively unscathed. Over here, we've had some, you know, two major lockdowns for a long period of time where shooting was prohibited and outdoor stuff's been prohibited. I'm lucky in the fact that we've got the game shoots, so I've been muddling around there with my gamekeepers and sorting, you know, bits and pieces out and trying to make improvements as and where we can. But unfortunately, lockdown came in the winter last year, right in the middle of the season, and we'd got everything, you know, ready and in place, and all the birds on the ground, which we'd had there for 6 months, and couldn't shoot them in the end, and finished up losing about $250,000. So it was a very difficult winter for us as a you know, as a shoot and as a couple because of If you go out and you make a bad decision and you lose a lot of money, I'm not saying that you can justify it, but when you don't have anything other than a global pandemic to cut you short, and everything's in place and it all looks really good, it's a bit galling. But look, we'll get through it, and you just got to start again and go again. So that's our thing. I think probably as a nation, we've probably dropped behind the eight ball slightly with regards to you guys and some of Europe for the amount of shooting you've done as opposed to what we've done. And I think, although we'll give it a good go to get back into it, I think that, the more you carry on and the more you don't get off the roundabout, as I would say, the better your timing is going forward.
Right. Kate told me that you were shooting today. What were you shooting today? A tournament?
We've got a lot of, as opposed to over there where you tend to have bigger area and regional events where you all have to travel, and there's quite a lot of traveling involved, but the events are a lot bigger. In other words, you'd have a main event and a fit ask, a five stand and sides and whatever that goes with it.
Right.
Over here we have a lot of smaller events, but they're you can do before the pandemic do multiple smaller events in one day, although the pandemic now is the fact of social distancing and everything has to be squadded and that sort of thing has reduced the amount you can do in one day. But I went to a shooting ground and just hosted a world championship before South Down today. Did two events, a sport trap and a sporting. Shot 97 in both, so I'm relatively happy with where the timing is. And the big problem for us is that there's no world or European travel for competitions, because most of the countries in Europe, apart from Portugal, are certainly on an amber list, which means we have to quarantine for 7 days when we get there and quarantine for 10 days when we get back. So, to have nearly 3 weeks sat in a hotel room to go to a clay shoot for 2 days is quite extravagant to even the best of people. So I'm going to wait until it calms down and we can get back to hopefully traveling as and when we want in a free environment again, and then build for that. But because we're not building for international and world events, I just find the motivation quite difficult. I've always over the last, certainly the last few years, tried to show off my wares on a global stage to the best of my ability. For that, you have to build for certain events and try and get your timing right for those events. Just like the golfers do and the tennis players do and everything else. And with a lack of international event and international competition, it's been quite difficult.
Yeah. The 2021 World English is going to be at EJ Churchill this year, correct? In July?
Yes, it is.
Okay. What have you heard anything about travel regulations for the people from the US or any other country?
Well,
at the moment
you're on an amber listed country. So, for my information, as it stands at the moment, you're only allowed to come here with a valid reason. Now, obviously, shooting the World Championships and competing in the World Championships will probably go down as a valid reason. But whatever happens, you have to quarantine at your own expense in a hotel for 10 days at a cost of £1,700. And it's that's where you're at with it.
Wow, that's amazing. You have to, so when you get there, you have to go sit in a hotel room for 10 days before you can shoot
and not come out, and literally you know, it's one of those things. It's that's a government regulation, and whether you come from Hungary, in fact, France, we've just gone on a amber list with France, and they've put some stipulations on that of, you know, we can't travel to France now till the end of June without quarantining for 10 days when we come back.
Wow.
And that's, you know, for me, I can get on the Channel Tunnel within 25 minutes and I can be in France in just over an hour. So for me, I could do shoots in France and I can get to those grounds quicker than I can get to a lot of English grounds, but I can't go.
Yeah, when do you think when do you think all this will ease up?
It's just a very hard thing to say. I mean, our restrictions are due to come out of the next phase on the 21st of June, I believe. I think that there's another set of relaxation due then. But, I mean, look, what that involves, and we've had a little bit of a spike in numbers over here. And you look at, you know, countries going into, I see Australia's, some states in Australia have locked down again, and they've been COVID-free for a bit. I see that India's still at 190,000 people, fresh cases today. You know, it's not, Argentina, I hear, is spiking pretty bad. I think there's a story here that's going to run a little bit longer,
mm-hmm.
As much as I don't want it to, and I think it's damaging people's mental health, the economy, but at the end of the day, what, you know, the governments are in charge, and they're in charge to save lives, and you know, I wouldn't want that job for all the tea in China, and I think on a whole they're doing a very good job on a thankless task. I wouldn't know. I just don't know where we're at with it. But at the end of the day, all we are doing is shooting a few clay pigeons out of the sky. It's not a matter of life or death, and COVID's a matter of life and death.
That's right. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the World English for a second. I've never been over there to shoot.
Yep.
Compare a world championship over there versus a world championship in the U.S. Maybe the targets, the presentation, stuff like that.
I think, look, your target setting over there has got progressively better. I would say from about the mid 2000s, there was a few guys came over and started setting targets over there, English designers, Neil Chadwick being one.
Mm-hmm.
He came quite early. John Woolley, a guy called Willie Thatcher, set one World English over there at least, I know. Mick Howells, Steve Middleditch, they've been setting targets over there. And I think a lot of your guys have picked up the mantle and taken it on. And just as Team USA has done, they've reinvented the wheel. You know, I know Rick Hemingway puts on fantastic targets and that now. I would just say that probably targets here are thrown with just a little bit more distance and a little bit more pace.
Yeah.
And I know that you've got some good grounds over there now with decent topography, but whereas the World English has always been held in San Antonio, or predominantly San Antonio, the only other time I've shot it outside of there was South Florida, and both those venues are quite flat, whereas a lot of our grounds over here have got some good topography, and, you know, the angle tends to be slightly more acute.
Yeah, yeah. I had a conversation, several conversations about this with different people. And the question I would ask them is, if you had an American team and a British team competing for a world title, which team would most likely win today?
In my view is that, you know, you as a nation are probably world leaders at the moment. You know, all sport comes and goes. Form is temporary, class is permanent. But for me, the way Team USA acts on and off the field. And the way, you know, I think probably what has pushed you on far, far more than you'll ever realise is the PSCA events that you started doing for a period of time over there.
Right.
Because it gave everybody the opportunity of shooting under immense pressure, whether it was for money or whether it was for pride on television or whatever. But it gave your best shooters the opportunity of competing head-to-head in pressure situations. And the, you know, money can't buy that. And it sort of fast-tracked where you were in the world. And I think now that there's, you know, you've always had 4 to 10 people that were capable of competing. You've now got 25 to 40 that are capable of competing at a world level. And you know, that makes a massive difference.
Yeah.
A massive difference.
Would your answer have been different 15 years ago?
Oh, without question.
Yeah.
Without question. But then, you know, 15 years ago, I would say that GB dominated the world.
Right.
Now, you know, you've got, there's a lot of nations now that are, you know, the French in the international disciplines, the French, the Australians, obviously the Americans, the Hungarian team. You know, Andras Cezahay has been shooting really well in Europe for a period of time, and that's driven on Jerry Tamas and people like that to shoot well over there. And all of a sudden, if you've got one or two people that are shooting well, and you've got one or two competitors that want to shoot well, and those people that are shooting well at the top are winning, they've got to go that extra mile to beat them. So all of a sudden, it becomes quite quick that you then get a lot of people come through the ranks and all start competing well at a similar time. Hence the reason that I said, you know, form is temporary, class is permanent. I think that GB will come back. I think GB will come back at you at some stage. But at the moment, your depth of shooter is such that you're going to be there for a little bit yet.
I was just thinking, in my line of work, the internet has 100% changed the way we do business. Do you feel that the internet has changed this sport?
Yeah, I think, you know, with in some good ways and some bad ways.
Right.
I think the ability to research knowledge, and I think that the better shots are freer with their time and the amount of knowledge and helpful stuff that they put out on the internet is, you know, fantastic. And I think it does the sport a lot of good. But then you've also got your keyboard warriors that one, bring the sport into disrepute, and two, they spend a huge amount of time on their talking absolute trash and putting rubbish, absolute rubbish out there that if I was a completely novice shot just going on there, one, I probably would look at it and say, do you know what, this sport's not for me, and or two, I'd believe it, start to do some of it, not hit anything, and give it up anyway. So, you know, whilst a lot of it's good, then there's also some negatives with it as well. But I think that the people that are in the know, that are gleaning the best of it out, it's definitely a plus point and an advantage.
One of the several things that amaze me about you is the amount of titles you hold. How many major titles do you have now?
It's not something I spout forth about. I know it's 26 world titles. I think it's 19 European, but the British and the international titles, the Grand Prix and everything else, I haven't done a stock take for a bit. My view of that is you're only as good as your last result. Mm-hmm. And for the last 3 or 4 years, I haven't had as many good results as I would like. but I intend, after being slightly inspired by Mr. Mickelson last weekend,
yes,
to put that right.
Oh yeah, it's good seeing him win.
Yeah, look, and you know, I thought it was quite interesting that, you know, I won my last world championship. I think it was 51. So 51, would it have been 51, 15? 52. So I've still got a couple of years on him yet.
Yeah.
I've still got a couple of years on him yet, but I'm a big believer in that if your timing's right and your physical presence and your mental presence is right, that age shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah. When you attend events now, like major events, do you feel you're under more pressure knowing that you're a former champion, or does this bother you at all?
Look, if I've got to my stage in life, having won 26 world championships, and I've got to the point where I'm worried what people think, then I shouldn't be doing it. I've got to say that my mental attitude has changed slightly in the fact of I do enjoy the company. I've been very lucky, and I've made such good friends all over the world, and I enjoy going to see those people and spending time with them as much as I do competing now, which has probably taken the edge off my shooting a little bit, and then also. Since our robbery in 16, I've probably tried a little bit too hard to prove to people that I can still do it after the robbery. And, you know, that's... if you look at any or listen to any interviews that I did in 13, 14, 15... when, you know, my timing was really good and, you know, I had a fantastic run culminating in winning the World English Sporting, the World Fitness Sporting and the World Compact in the same year in 15. It was all because I didn't care anymore and I was just enjoying my shooting and I just, you know, went out and shot. Since the robbery in 16, unfortunately, I've had a bit more of an attitude that I sort of want to try and show people that I can still do it, even after being hit over there with a £4.5 club hammer. And it's probably changed how I've gone about stuff and approached it. And I'm just sort of getting my head round it and getting back now to the right sort of mindset to go and compete again.
You know, I wasn't going to bring up the robbery, and some people may not know what you're talking about. Can you go into that briefly and let people know what happened?
Yeah, look, you know, I've got no issue talking about it now. Kate and I were sitting at home on a Sunday night, 8 o'clock in the winter's evening. And there was an almighty crash, and four masked guys smashed the French windows in, which was about 2 or 3 foot from where I was sitting. I had a taser stuck in my throat while they tied Kate up, and then I got hit over the head with a £4.5 club hammer, which, you know, an inch either way would have been temple or eye, which would have probably killed me. And then they ransacked the house, stole some guns and, you know, lots of different things. A lot of all my big trophies, got a lot of gold medals, et cetera, and vehicles and whatever. And then they left. But the worst part of it is the gang then went on 2 weeks later to murder somebody in the next village. So, you know, it was a pretty serious gang, and the main perpetrators have been brought to justice. Not all of them, but the main perpetrators have been brought to justice. But it just shows how serious they were with regards to the fact that they killed the guy in the next village 2 weeks later. It could easily have been me. And at certain times during it, I thought it could have been me, but my name wasn't there that night. And we're over it now, and, you know, it's part of life's great tapestry, one that I'd like to change, but unfortunately we can't. So it's just, you know, going on from there, it's after that sort of thing happens, and it is a major trauma and life changes forever, you want to try and prove then that you can still do it and still compete, even though you've had that sort of thing. And I've tried too hard. You know, I've had some half reasonable results, but not where I'd quite like to be. And I also, you know, decided that I would change my gun in and around that period as well, and move to a high tech, which, you know, has culminated in me trying to shoot that gun as well. I think it's just exasperated the whole thing. So, hey, look, you know, everything takes time, and, you know, we're both over it now as much as you'll ever be. And I just hope things going forward, you know, I'm working reasonably hard at it, because I don't want to get left behind when it does all open up again. So it'll be interesting to see going forward what happens.
Yeah, it sounds like your competitive edge is back now versus before that happened.
Yeah. Look, in 15, I, as I said, I won the three world championships, which has never been done before, and it was, you know, quite a feat, and you know, one of which I'm incredibly proud of. Mm-hmm. When you think of the level of competition that there is about nowadays, and in 16, which was the year it happened, I came second to Derek, I believe, in Italy, at the World Fitesc. So, you know, I wasn't far away then. And then I think everything sort of dawned and you know, went into it. And almost because of what's happened, you almost take a look at, you know, well, I'm actually quite lucky to be here. I'm going to enjoy stuff a bit more, and I've enjoyed going out with my mates. I, you know, shoot with Jamie Brightman, I shoot with Henry Arnold over here, and we treat it as much a day out as going to a clay shoot now, whereas before I was completely focused on going out, competing and breaking targets. And since we've come back from the latest lockdown, I've done a lot more shooting on my own, and I felt that it's probably a little bit easier for me to focus shooting on my own, or certainly in a squad of people. You know, I travel with someone, but then we shoot in a squad of people that we don't know, so it's easier to focus and just pretty much, you know, obviously be social during the course, but we don't have to treat it as a gregarious day out and not focus quite so much on the shooting. And then, like everything, the better you get, the more you enjoy it. The more you enjoy it, the better you get. So it's a revolving circle.
Yeah. As you're getting older, do you see any changes in your shooting?
I'd like to think not. I think that probably you get a bit slower, a lot of people would say, oh, I couldn't get any fatter, but you know, you just, you know, when you're in lockdown and you're not doing anything, you're not working quite as ferociously as you would have done normally. I've always been a big bloke, but I've been a fit bloke because I'm on 24/7. In lockdown, you're not doing that. So I think you need to build up a bit of match fitness. You know, I'm trying to do that as well to get back, because however big or however small you are, to be mentally fit, you've also got to have an element of physical fitness. And you know, by doing that, it's you're able to concentrate for those 3, 4, 5 pairs at a time that you need to concentrate for. And one target nowadays makes all the difference. So that edge is definitely needed.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big guy myself, and I was going to go shoot over there till they told me I had to walk to all the stations.
I've got to say that when I set it in 18, I did set it that you started at the top of the hill and finished at the bottom. So I did have that in mind.
You thought about that, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, yeah. Only thing I'd be worried about is where the next concession stand was at. So, are you doing any coaching, George?
Yeah, I've been doing a little bit. More on a sort of a corporate basis.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoy putting back into the sport. The sport's given me a hell of a lot. And although it's given me a lot, you make your own luck within a lot of it. But it's nice to put something back in. It's nice to do some promotional stuff. I've been through lockdown. It was so boring that I took to interviewing one or two people on my Facebook page. And that was, in fact, pleasantly informative. I've interviewed quite a lot of people in different sides to the sport. So some trap, Olympic champions, World Fitness champions, past and present. And you know, it's been quite enlightening what a lot of them have got to say. And as I'm sure you're finding out doing this. If people are prepared to open up to you, there's some very informative stuff to come out.
Yep. Are you still doing that, George? I've seen it, but are you still doing it?
I will get back to doing it. The evenings are drawn out here, and you know, because we're sort of out of lockdown and restaurants only opened 2 weeks ago. In fact, 2 weeks ago today. So, you know, a lot of people now, it's sort of summer evenings, they can get out in the garden or they can go out to parks and things like that, which they haven't been able to do before. Or they can actually go to a restaurant and eat in a restaurant now, which we haven't been able to do for 6 months, which I know that hasn't happened over there with you. So, you know, you just, all I'm saying is just get your head round the fact of, you know, not being able to go to your favourite restaurant in the town or the city for 6 months. We've had that nearly twice now. And so, you know, consequently, because people are doing that and they're going to restaurants and they're getting out and they're going to pubs and whatever, I think that for me it's a sort of a winter thing where, you know, there's not so much going on in a winter's evening and you get those cold, wet winter's evenings. People will sit down and look at a vodcast on Zoom a bit more than they would do if the sun's shining, and they can go out to a restaurant now, having been cooped up for 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let me ask you a few coaching questions. If a shooter wants to be successful in clay target sports, do you think they should find a coach that has proven themselves as a winner?
I don't necessarily think that they should find a coach that has proven themselves as a winner. What I think they need to do is they need to find a coach that if they were competing themselves, that they could turn around, and if they couldn't hit something, they could turn around to the coach who's telling them what to do and give him the gun and say, "Will you show me?" And the coach would be able to show them. What I find slightly galling is, you know, the people that preach and then can't do it themselves, mm-hmm. And have never been in that position to do it themselves. You see it. A prime example is the club shooter, and I've always said it, and I call it, I've got a term for it, the blind leading the blind, mm-hmm. Which can be used for a lot of things, I know. But you go out on a Sunday morning, and I've seen it all my life, and Joe walks in the stand, and he goes, bang, bang, pair lost. And he turns around to his mate, says, "Where was I?" "Oh, you're over the top of them." "Bang, bang. Where was I?" "You're in front of them." "Bang, bang. Where was I?" "Oh, you're behind." "Bang, bang. Yeah, you're behind." "Bang, bang. Yeah, you went over the top of them." And Joe comes out of the stand shaking his head thinking, "Why did I get 3 out of 10? And Brian, who's been coaching him, goes in there. "Bang, bang. Where was I?" And that's how it runs on. And you've got Brian teaching Joe and Joe teaching Brian, and both of them come out 3 out of 10.
Yeah.
Well, that's not helping anybody, is it?
Nope.
And I don't think you have to be a proven winner. I think it helps. I think you have to be a good communicator, and you have to get what you're trying to communicate over in a way that the pupil understands it. I think some of the better international shots try to get their pupils running before they can walk. And I think the basics start at home. And, you know, if you can get people to break skeet targets, you'll have a lot better job and a lot easier job out on a sporting course.
If you had to choose one thing that a shooter could focus on the most to make them better, what would it be?
Feet, without any shadow of a doubt. Most clays are missed by 2 feet, and it's not the 2 feet up in the sky, it's the 2 feet underneath them. And, you know, look, if your body's in the right position and you can rotate, if your feet are right, you'll keep your shoulders square. If you can keep your shoulders square, you won't roll offline. And they're the two biggest things that cause people to miss.
All right, explain that for people that may not know what you're talking about.
So, the easiest way for me to describe it, and most people will understand the golf analogy. Mm-hmm. So if you want to hit a ball up in the air, you place the ball when you're about to hit it further in your stance, so that as your swing plane comes through and the club is starting its upward plane, the ball is further in your stance, so it will hit the ball on an upward plane, consequently causing it to go higher because you have an open club face. If you want the ball to go lower, you put it further back in your stance so that the club face is closed as it comes into impact. Consequently, because it's closed, the ball goes lower. Exactly the same with shooting. Your shoulders need to be square, because if you're lent forward, the gun is going to come down. And if you're lent back, your gun is going to go up in the air. And your feet are relative to how your shoulders are. Because if you stand in a relaxed manner with your shoulders over your feet, as though you would be having a conversation, your shoulders can't come offline. But as soon as you start widening your stance or narrowing your stance, your shoulders can rock all over the place.
Yeah, that's interesting how you related it to golf.
Golf, look, golf, shooting, and you look at it. All right, you watch one or two of the golfers now, you look at DeChambeau and people like that, they try and smash the enamel off a golf ball. Mm-hmm. But if you watch Roger Federer play tennis, or Ernie Els hit a golf ball in his prime, and Garcia and people like that, they swing easy. And shooting, tennis, squash, all of that is a very, very, golf is a very similar swing technique. It's just making sure that at impact everything is square. You look at the experts when they talk about Jim Furyk playing golf. They'll say that he has got the worst technique of any professional golfer they watch. However, at impact, he's perfect. Now, where you start from and where you get to and where you finish is completely irrelevant. As long as at impact, your shoulders are square and your feet are in the right position so that you've got body rotation. And your feet are relative as well. Your feet are relative as well to your body position, so that you're swinging your whole body with your arms, not just your arms.
Yeah, makes sense, for sure.
But all of those top people make sport look easy. And the reason is because their feet are in the correct position and they don't have to move half as fast as anybody else because their feet are in the correct position and they've already made that movement to get into the correct position early. They know what they're doing. So they can execute the shot, and they haven't got to worry about, am I leaning back, am I leaning forward? They know what position they're in.
So say you have a pair. Do you line yourself up more with the first target or the second target?
Depends which is the most difficult, and whether or not you've got time to move your feet.
Okay.
So if you've got an on-report pair, and you've got time to move your feet, then you only need to move one foot to open yourself out. So my philosophy would be that if you need to open yourself up for a target going right-handed, I move my right foot back, so consequently I've then opened myself up. And if I've got a target going over my left shoulder and I need to open myself up that way, I move my left. So I go right, left. And then that way I'm only moving one foot, but I'm still making the entire movement with my body. If I haven't got time to change feet or move my feet during the shot, then I'll set for the harder target and shoot the easier target slightly awkwardly.
Yeah. I see a lot of people that walk up in the shooting stand and never change their feet at all. They stand in the same position. And that's...
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's not what you're
supposed
to do. Absolutely,
but that is where a good coach will gain people targets. And that's where a coach who thinks coaching is telling people where they miss won't get them any targets.
Yeah.
That's the difference between coaching and telling people where they're missing. And there's two very, very big differences.
Right. Yeah. If you had to pick one thing that could make someone a winner, what would that one thing be?
I think that you can't make a winner. You can't make a winner. People have it inside them.
Yeah.
As to whether they are or they aren't.
Yeah.
And getting into those positions and failing makes a winner. I think the people, and very validly, I think a lot of, you know, the people that have got into a position and won very early on in their career, probably think they've arrived and have probably found it too easy. And then when the hard work comes, they don't put in the same amount of effort as someone that knows how difficult it is and has been there several times before and failed, and they'll put in double the amount of work to make sure they don't fail again. A prime example for me in that would be Bobby Fowler, who knocked on the door at the World English for probably 10, 12, 15 years until he won it. And he did all the hard work and he deserved it. Fair play to him. But he put himself in that position for a long period of time. He worked to that position. It wasn't that it just so happened to arrive and he took it with both hands. He'd worked for that because he put himself in that position certainly in 13, and got beaten. He had a chance to win it and got beaten by Richard Foulds because he shot the last stand poorly. And all the time you're working to put yourself in those positions, you'll get there if you've got that drive and that determination and an ability to put up with the pain and come back from it. But a lot of people get to the pain stage and then roll over.
I heard that you say somewhere, I heard this, that you do not practice at all for a tournament. Is that correct?
No, I haven't shot any practice at all for 15, 20 years. And when I was shooting any practice at all, it was double trap, and I was just trying to get my time in for double trap. I haven't shot any sporting practice at all. However, in the last sort of 2 months, I have shot about 1,000 practice with a mate of mine, Henry Arnold, who's got his own little layout at home. And we've shot a few practice there just so that I can keep my timing, just so I can keep my timing in and try and keep pace with the rest of the world, because I don't really want to, be left behind.
What is the benefit for you in not practicing?
I'm a massive believer in that. If you believe and you've proven over a period of time that your technique is sound, then what are you practicing? Because the targets you're practicing, you're not going to get in a competition unless you go and shoot skeet or trap when you're practicing a discipline. But you go and practice sporting, the targets you practice, wherever you practice them, when you go to the competition field, are going to be completely different to what you've been practicing. Now, it's in my view, you've got your mindset comes into two plays. You walk into an arena and you think, I've been really shooting well, and the targets aren't what you've been practicing, and you miss one or two early on, and all of a sudden the doubt comes in. Or when you're practicing, you haven't shot particularly well, and you go to the event, and you're already on the back foot, and the targets actually suit you. But because you're on the back foot, you miss one or two anyway, because you're trying too hard, and et cetera, et cetera. I don't see any positives to it at all. The only thing I used to do when I had a bit of success over with you, through the 2000, I can't remember the years, I'd be lying if I could, but from the sort of mid 2005s through to 15, I suppose, I started shooting, and I used to come and just shoot the event, literally the main event, and not do anything else. And then I just started shooting the five stand, mm-hmm. and the prelim the day before the event. And the reason I did that is purely for a visual point of view, because you used to shoot, I don't know whether you still do, but you used to shoot a lot of black rimmed orange targets. And we don't get those in the UK. And the black rimmed orange target gives a visual appearance of something different, because it gives the appearance of a midi or the flight of a midi, but it's a normal. And I was being caught out on the first day of the competition, and it was taking me 100 targets to get into the competition, because visually I wasn't used to shooting those targets. So I then started shooting the five stand and the prelim the day before, so that I was up to pace when I came into the main event.
Yeah.
But obviously it's competition, but I was using it purely from a practice angle.
In your opinion, if you were going to tell somebody how to practice, would it be on a skeet field?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, if you shoot a 24 or a 25 at skeet, however you get to that stage when you're shooting, there isn't a single skeet target that when you're out and about on a sporting layout, every single sporting target represents a skeet target. So you've got from station 1 to station 7, you've got every sporting target you can imagine. The distances may vary, obviously. The distances may vary. But then if your technique is sound, whether you're shooting a target at 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, it makes no difference. It's only your speed of swing.
So, I mean, it makes sense for sure. Do you feel like shooting trap would help you as well?
Yeah, no, there's no question. No question. Trap and skeet. Anything that is a discipline. Anything that is a discipline that you have to do the same every single time for. And something you can get your timing on. So if your timing's good, you're going to break the targets. If your timing's good, you're going to break the target. You're going to go to a competition. Your timing's good. Your concentration's good. Your timing from your first bird to your second bird is going to be good. So consequently, you're going to make a smooth transition. Probably kill more in your doubles that way. I can only see it as a benefit, not a detraction from it.
Are you shooting the 34-inch barrels now?
No. I experimented very early on. I experimented very early on in my Paratsy career with some 34-inch barrels.
Okay.
Because when I moved from Cayman to Paratsy, were always heavier in the barrel, the Cayman. And Paratsy, being a trap gun, I've had lighter barrels, and they handle that much quicker. I mean, it's the best handling gun that has ever been on the market. And I was getting to a lot of stuff very, very quickly. I then thought, well, if I go to 34-inch barrels, it's going to be a little bit heavier. I'm still getting the stuff very quickly, and it'll just steady me up. Now, in my shooting career, I'm a massive believer in that if you want to build a big score, you've got to kill every, what most people would class as an easy target, or relatively straightforward target. You've got to kill every one of them and as many of the hard ones as you can.
Right.
And that way, you'll always have a good to mean average score. Sometimes you'll shoot a lot more of the hard ones, and you'll shoot a very good score. Now, when I shot the 34-inch barrels, I was killing all of the hard ones and missing several easy to straightforward targets that I would normally kill. And I shot it for probably 8 to 10 weeks. And I just couldn't get to the point, you know, long crosses, 34-inch barrels on long crosses, just, you never ever thought you were going to miss, because they were so steady and so smooth and everything else. And for you know, high pheasants or something like that, it's just the gun of all guns. In fact, I've just had a high-tech 20-ball made with 34-inch barrels for shooting high pheasants. And it's a beautiful gun to, you know, I absolutely shot it last season and absolutely thoroughly enjoyed it. But for me, and I'm a big bloke, to shoot 34-inch barrels is too much.
What are your hobbies when you're not shooting? What do you do when you're not shooting?
I used to have the motto that it was anything that didn't involve work, but unfortunately that's come to a bit of a shuddering stop after last season. I love playing cricket, which you wouldn't even know what it was or know the rules of.
No.
It's a very quintessentially English game. I enjoy my golf when I get a chance, and I'm very lucky to have some really nice friends that I've got some, you know, they're members of some just fabulous clubs in the UK, and I get some great invitations to go and play there. I love a bit of fly fishing. I love, you know, catching a trout or a salmon. And then my main passion in life is country sports and the countryside. You know, we run some commercial game shoots, and I'm always out in the countryside, be it looking after the shoots or trying to shoot a few pigeons or a few crows, or just generally sitting watching the countryside. You learn so much by sitting watching a lot of things that, you know, that most people, it passes them by because they're in too much of a hurry.
Well, that's, when are you coming to the US next? Do you have any idea?
Well, we were due to come over last year for the World Fit Ask. I think probably the World English is going to finish up a bit like your World Fit Ask last year, where there wouldn't be many overseas people attending it. I don't know quite how it will finish up. I hope it doesn't. I hope it's a full international field.
Yeah.
But at the moment, the signs don't look great.
Right.
I'd love to come to the US whenever we get the opportunity. I've got some great friends over there. And, you know, I love competing over there. I love meeting new people. We did a really interesting talk. Ron Holden invited me over to South Florida. I think it was 15. And we did a big sort of gala dinner on the last night. And then I did a Q&A session. And it was incredibly well attended. And I think Ron had to stop it in the end after about 2 hours because it could have gone on all evening. And those sort of things I love doing. So, you know, if I get the opportunity to come over to the States again and we can do something like that, it'd be lovely because it's nice to meet new people and they've always got, you know, different questions.
That's right. Well, George, I know you have things to do. It's late where you're at, and I appreciate you coming on and talking to me for a little bit. One of the best in the game, and I appreciate it. And I appreciate Kate as well putting up with me. So thank you for that.
Look, no problem at all. And, look, I wish you all the best. I wish everybody, you know, there'll be a lot of people listening to this. I wish them all the best and hope they have a really good season. You keep up the good work. It's nice that, you know, you're able to put something back into the industry through these podcasts, and I know they've got a good following, and, you know, I only hope that, you know, we can all get back as a clay shooting family at some stage and start having competitions similar to those before the pandemic. But if you look, if people have got questions for me or you want me back on at any stage, don't hesitate to pick up the phone.
I'll sure do it. Thank you, George, and have a good night, and we'll see you soon.
Yeah, my pleasure. No problem.
For more podcasts like these, visit ShotgunSportsUSA.com or subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app.